It's a joy to finally have our first ballet guest here in studio.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movie.
All right, you guys, I'm getting totally punny here on To The Point with Kristen Burt. Welcome on in. We are so excited to have you guys here. And of course, To The Point is presented by Popcorn Talk and Dance Network. And I am thrilled that we finally have our first ballet guest just in time for Nutcracker season. As I said before, Joy Womack. I love that. I did the joy. I thought
you
that was funny.
It was great. You did a great job.
Welcome here to the studio. I'm thrilled to have you here.
I think it's really awesome to be here. And I watched your show on YouTube. And I love the fact that dancers are getting more vocal and more open to share their stories online. And it really is able to reach so many different kinds of people. Like one of the people who was on the Home and Family show, she's a host. She's like, oh yeah, I used to watch your vlogs on YouTube. And I was like, what? That's crazy.
I have to tell you, so many people reached out when I announced you as the guest. So many people were like, I watch her show or on YouTube, or they say I follow her on Instagram. So you definitely have a strong social media presence for sure.
I love my Prima friends because yeah, we're not very many, but we're a very strong and very loyal group. And it's awesome to see so many of them. The best stories are those who started watching the videos and then they started dance.
Oh,
and
isn't
that's
the best?
So amazing.
Inspiring people. Because I think what people think oftentimes is they watch dance and they think, well, I didn't start at eight or I didn't, you know, make it a professional career. But listen, dance is for everyone. I always say it's for everybody. Yeah, it really is.
It really is. And there's no age limit. And the crazy story was a dad started dancing after his kids. Like, he would take his kids to drop them off at, you know, Nutcracker practice and, you know, go to ballet class. And they, you know, they kind of ended and went in to focus on school. And he was like, look, I really enjoy this. And he just started taking adult classes.
I love that. He's a
dancer. He's a dancer. He's a dancer.
So great. Yeah. Well, I really want to dive in because your story is so fascinating to me. And I was like, it is kind of crazy if you really think about it. And you are a California baby first and foremost.
Yes.
You were born here and you're one of nine kids.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were right here in Los Angeles. You were born, right?
I grew up literally on the ocean of Santa Monica, like San Vicente. That's where I grew up. San Vicente and 25th Street, just walking around the block, you know, going surfing in the mornings and then going to school. That was my life until I decided that I really wanted to dance. And my parents, actually what kind of kickstarted it is my family decided to move to Austin, Texas. And I threw a hunger strike. I was like, this is crazy. Don't you understand that this is my calling? And my mom's looking at me, 10 years old, like, how do you know what you're going to do?
How old were you when you started dancing?
Well, I mean, I think my parents didn't know what to do with me because I was knocking down furniture and just sort of in the way. And my mom had just delivered twins. And I think she was pregnant with another one. And they were just like, we've got to get this Tara somewhere. I mean, she is literally pulling down antiques at antique stores. And they brought me with my twin brother and sister to like a mommy and me dance kind of a thing where they had like ballet, tap, and jazz. And I just didn't want to leave the ballet room. And I think it was three or four.
That's incredible. And then you did eventually wind up at West Side Ballet, correct?
Yes. And I started pre-ballet there. And that was my first school, the first time I'd seen the Nutcracker, the first time I got to, you know, really kind of get an idea of this is something that I could do for a living. And it was just incredible to be working with Yvonne Muncy and all the amazing teachers.
Yeah.
And West Side is such a unique school because it's really kind of the feeder program for SAB. There's so many amazing dancers who are principal dancers with New York City Ballet who actually like born and raised and started going to West Side Ballet when they were
younger. It's one of the strongest schools out here in Los Angeles and has a long history too.
Yeah.
I think that's what's so important.
And I think that's what's really makes it, it sets itself apart because of they have a long history. They kind of know the ropes. If that's the way that you want to go, if you want to be a Balanchine dancer or you want to dance for an American company, I would say they do a great job of giving kids a performance opportunity. And they're so encouraging. And they really love each and every one of their students.
Oh, I love that. So you're 10 and your parents are moving to Texas.
They decided to move when I was 11.
Okay.
So I went on hunger strike. I refused. I said, you're ruining my life. This is horrible. And we moved to Austin and I refused to enroll in school. And I was traveling back and forth. And Yvonne finally said to my dad, she's like, because they took me to Ballet Austin. And I was like, look, this is not training. That
not
is going to make me a dancer, you know? And my dad's like, you're 11 years old. You don't know what is going to work for you. And Yvonne pulled him aside and said, look, if you can't find a good Balanchine studio, look for a Russian teacher. And my mom got lost one day and found this Russian woman who just, you know, she was trained Russian. And she just reworked with me for 6 months. And then I got accepted to the Kirov. And I moved to the Kirov when I was 12.
And so everyone knows, the Kirov is in Washington, yeah, D.C. Just so everyone knows that they didn't ship you off to Russia just yet.
Not yet. And then I spent 2 years there and I wanted more. And
were you there year-round or just the summer?
Year-round. Okay. And what is so great about Kirov is they really prepared me for Russia. But that was just when the YGP kind of boom was happening. So, I mean,
that's Youth America Youth Grand Prix. American I'm going to throw out acronyms at people just so they know.
This is, I mean, Youth American Grand Prix is now the biggest like pre-professional ballet competition in the States. But like when I was in school, it was sort of, it was like up and coming. It was kind of, it was a good way to try to launch yourself if you wanted to go to Europe, if you wanted to do that. And we had a couple of girls, fantastic. Patricia Joe, who's now with Benjamin Millepied here.
LA Dance Project.
LA Dance Project. She's so brave. I'm so proud of her. And Deanna Pearson, who is, I think she's now in Romania with a partner of mine. Anyway, it's so weird. The world, the ballet world is like
very
this.
Small world.
And they were the mini bitty ballerinas. And I was prepubescent, you know, at a very young age. And my teacher was like, look, you don't have the turnout and you don't have the extension. You don't have the turns. Like, to be a YGP baby. And I was so despondent. I just wanted to be challenged more. And I went up by myself on the train to New York City to visit my grandmother. And somebody was like, look, there's a master class going on. One of the Bolshoi teachers is going. And I went and she said, look, would you be interested in coming to the year-round program? And it was just so serendipitous and just everything that's happened in my life, it was almost like I was forced into it in a sense. Like, there wasn't any other option. And, like, I had just been told by the director of my school, like, look, you maybe will never even become a professional dancer. You don't have the turnout. You don't have the coordination.
You're hearing this as a young kid. Like, that's hard to hear.
It was hard. It was. And I really didn't know what to do. And my parents were spending a lot of money, you know, sending me to a really good school. But, you know, even if you get the best schooling, the getting a professional ballet dancing job rate in the States is so hard. Especially a paying job.
Yes. And at one of the major companies, too. And we're talking about companies that work almost year-round, at least. And it's even harder because I know even ABT has
34 weeks. Yeah, ABT is 34 weeks, which I think, you know, after working in Russia, after working in Europe, I mean, that's kind of a disgrace. You can't pay your dancers 52 weeks out of the year and give them vacation time.
Do you know what City Ballet is, New York City Ballet?
City Ballet is one of the best paying. And I think they work 48. Okay. If I'm not mistaken.
And they have 4 weeks
and
off.
They, but, I mean, City Ballet does a great job. That's, like, actually probably one of the best companies, I think, in the States to work for. But it's very specific. You have to go to SAB. You have to kind of make that decision very early on.
Yes, you need to be, like, 10, 11, 12 and be in SAB at that point.
And, frankly, a lot of parents who aren't from ballet, you know, dynasties don't have that information. And I think that's what's so hard about training to be a professional dancer in the States is there's such a lack of information of, like, what is the trajectory? What do we want? And you have to kind of know and get organized super early, or you have to be lucky.
Yeah, and if you don't have that local dance teacher that understands what that system is and knows how to train those students and feed them into SAB, not going to happen.
We just have an overall lack of syllabus in the States. And just because you dance for a professional company does not mean you're qualified to teach children or, you know, or train them to become dancers. And we kind of sort of like, oh, well, that person worked for this ballet. They must know what they're doing. And that's so hard. And I just find when parents come to me and ask me questions, I just want to be like, do your research. Don't be afraid to write an email to a dancer in a ballet company. You know, get a second opinion. Watch
online. What should parents be looking for? Because that's a really great question. In terms of, like, in a teacher, what should they be looking for?
I think they need to find a teacher who's, you can see, is invested in the child, in the child's well-being. So that means a teacher that's going to tell the student, no, you can't do that. you can't. That's too early. That's not age appropriate, or that's not the right thing for you.
Getting on point too early drives me bananas. Getting on point too early,
going for these crazy like oversplits, this new fad of like Instagram dancing, and which you've got like these teeny bitty ballerinas trying to get skinnier and skinnier because they want to gain more followers. I'm like, this has got to stop, or someone has to talk about it, because it's not about those 15 seconds in your Instagram story. It's about who you are, what you want to say on stage, and your consistency, your dedication, and your work ethic. And that's more than just taking a picture after class.
100%. And, you know, it's, I think also sometimes I find that we've got really good technique on certain ones, and then there's no passion. All it is place, technique, nice, technique, man. Leg. And I was like, what's behind it? Like, yeah. Where are you getting that emotion and that passion to dance?
You know, and I would also, I mean, I think it's interesting, and it's, you know, some people are saying I'm anti-competition. No, I think competition is a great opportunity for kids to get stage time. Mm-hmm. But I think that we need to work with our judges on the jury about how we score certain things, and what are the criteria for certain ages. Because if we're going to have 12-year-old Black Swan ODLs, I think that we have a problem. Like, we need to talk about how that's like, who is ODL, what is her role, you know? I mean, frankly, I think of Black Swan as a, you know, that part, that role, it's a woman who knows who she is and is her own in her own skin. And that is not a 12-year-old.
No, they don't understand that. They don't have the vocabulary. They haven't lived life. They don't have the emotion for it.
Right. I think I'll go for it. Like, love seeing those beautiful 12-year-olds who are doing the wonderful pirouettes. But also, I mean, to study the history and not just be a parrot. You know, oh, I saw that. I want to copy that. Like, why are we doing that? What is the importance of that? You know, what is the stories of the ballet? What is the history? Who's the choreographer?
You know. Thank you for saying that. I talk about this all the time on the show, of like, this generation is so fortunate. They've got everything right there for them on YouTube. I mean, I had to go and take like a dance history class in college, which was taught by the amazing Deborah Jowett. And I learned so much. But I mean, it was literally like books and going to the library and studying. It's all right there for you. And people just don't even want to find out who came before, whether it's a Broadway choreographer or commercial dance or ballet. You need to understand this, because it isn't just the person that dropped in 2017 that created this movement.
Exactly. I was just in Canberra, and some of the kids were like, had a little question and answer with some of the students, and they said, oh, and I said, okay, who's the choreographer of The Sleeping Beauty? And they're like, Joy Womack is the choreographer. I was like, no, I am not the choreographer of
Sleeping Beauty. That is lovely.
That is a great idea, but no, it's Marius Petipa, and, you know, the ballet is over 100 years old, you know, like, it's, and that just makes me a little bit sad, like, really? Okay, come on, kids, come tomorrow with two 20th century choreographers, and it gets them interested, and
know one little fact about them, or something like that. Yeah. Just to get them started.
And I think, I mean, people have this idea of dance just being so simple and just this lighthearted undertaking, but there's such a rich history. There's so many beautiful people who came before and you know, created, and how fun it is to know about them and then make your own thing. And then, you know, bring that into who you are as a dancer on stage.
And it also makes you a better dancer, because when you have the understanding of the material, then the way you're translating it and your interpretation of it, the audience will understand it more too, instead of just like, that was amazing fouettes, and, you know.
The best dancer is a smart dancer. And there's a lot that goes into that. That's not just hours in the studio.
That's a really good point. I love that. Mm-hmm. And for you, what I think is so fascinating, because you were a young, smart dancer.
I don't think I was smart.
But. I don't know. I think so, though, because I don't think that many, you know, kids that are sort of preteen, early teens, understand, like, I want to go and I want to study in Russia, or I know that this training is going to be right for me. You kind of, like, you're in a program and you kind of like it, and your mom drops you off, and you might be there 5 days a week. I don't think people have the understanding of, like, what you did at your age.
I think that it's so important that if you decide that dance is for you, you need to strategize with open eyes at your limits and your strengths, and be real with yourself. Don't sugarcoat it, and that's hard. And I think for me, I was just very ambitious, and I knew it wasn't working this way. And to have some, you know, old Russian woman think that I was the next best thing since sliced bread, I was like, well, she obviously doesn't know. So, you know, it's kind of taking a risk. But I also knew that I love Russian ballet. I was obsessed at that time with Natalia Osifova. I saw her premiere in Giselle, and I saw her premiere in Lebaydere. Like, I was a little student waiting in line for the 200 ruble tickets. And to be able to see those people that I had idolized up close and almost touch them was so important. Because I wanted exactly what she had, and I saw her trajectory. You know, her dorm mother was my dorm mother, you know, these kind of things. And I sort of had it in my mind that if I followed a certain path, it's going to be my own path. But there's certain truths to that. There's certain
logic
to that.
She laid some blueprints that you were like, I kind of like this.
Yeah.
So when you went over to Russia, you were 15. It was 2009. Is that correct? Okay. So you do not speak the language, correct?
No, not a word.
You had never traveled abroad? Is that correct?
I had never. I mean, I think I'd been to Mexico, but I don't think that really counts.
Anybody when you live in California, knows, I know. It's like right over the border.
Tijuana.
Exactly. You're like, yay, we're here. It doesn't really feel like a foreign. Exactly. No. When you go to Ensenada and things like that. It doesn't feel like a foreign country in many ways. So this is a big travel abroad. It's one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah. Especially when I went, the ruble still hadn't fallen.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What was your first, like, month like there? Because I've got to, I think about doing it as an adult, and I'm completely overwhelmed just thinking about it. What was it like as a teen?
I think that's a really interesting point, because with the eyes that I have now, I don't know if I would have done it. Like, I think it was good that I was naive and I didn't know. When I went, it was, I mean, really my first experience kind of in a foreign place. So to go, and I just remember driving down Tverskaya, which is huge, 6-lane, like, each road, and just thinking, this is huge. And then the architecture, because in the States we're so used to, like, kind of like thrown together houses, super,
and then when
easy.
We don't like it, we knock it down and we rebuild.
And I'll never forget, people ask me, like, what was it like living to Russia? I'm like, imagine not thinking about, like, where toilet paper comes from, and then you're given one piece of, like, saw paper, like one roll of saw paper, that's your ration for a month. You got to make that last. And you don't know how to say toilet paper in Russian.
Right.
And you don't even know the way to the Ram store, which is what, you know, the shops that were nearby. You weren't allowed out, you know, and just, I mean, of course I learned afterwards you should go and if you see somebody's extra toilet paper, don't take theirs. But if you see the door to the housekeeping closet open, grab it while you can. And, you know, navigating the Japanese mafia for the one washing machine out of, for the 300 students. I mean, like, there's just crazy stories, but...
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, and my leotards kept disappearing and just, you know,
you're
weird,
like, where
strange
are they
things.
Going?
They're all gone.
You were the only American there at the time?
I was... No, this is a clarification, because a lot of people say, oh, you know, Joy wasn't the first American, blah, blah, blah. There were foreigners there. I was brought in to supplement a Russian class, which they didn't have until my time. American girls in the Russian class finishing that program, getting their Russian diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And my situation is very unique, because now there's a lot of American girls there after I did my thing,
mm-hmm.
Who they're there, they're in the Russian class, but they're not being used. I was being given principal roles in school right when I got off the airplane, basically. And that was so hard, because I went into a class and I, like, the kids were like, who is this girl? And she's taking away my opportunity.
Yeah.
And
you don't speak the language, so you can't understand what they're saying about you, right?
I was just very, very, very lucky. There was a woman there, Natalia Arkhipova, and she was like, I think I can help you become a dancer in the Bolshoi, and that's what I want to do. And so for the first year, she pushed me so hard. And she, you know, taught me the whole ballet of La Fima Garde, the whole ballet of Nutcracker, so that I could be the understudy for the senior girls. And, like, I mean, I'm just like this basically freshman,
right?
You know, coming in, and she's pushing me. I don't speak the language. I don't have the training. And I had to retrain at the same time, go back and undo so many bad habits, so many Americanisms.
Let's talk about, what are some of those Americanisms that you had to, the hands?
Oh, turnout is something you shouldn't force. There's an idea of turnout, you don't force turnout, but there are muscles that you can train if you train them in the right way. So just standing at the bar and doing the slowest tendus, literally 8 counts out and 8 counts in, and learning where my back was, learning where my hands should be, learning hand-eye coordination, going through first position. These are things I don't see in American students. We go for the grand allegro without going through first position.
So, and we crank the turnout. I will tell you, I've got hips that that feel it, like
you
now.
You copy turnout, but real turnout comes from the ankle bone, mm-hmm. protecting that joint. And so to have somebody break that down and show me how to work with my limited, you know, facility and work smart was just, it was mind-blowing, and it was so hard. It was so humbling. And then when that teacher, she left because her husband had a health crisis in the second year, I had to start over from the bottom and prove myself over again and get up and go to this principal dancer's house, and she would train me from 6 to 8, and then I'd get on the train, go to school, and train the rest of the day. And that's kind of when progress started to happen. Because somebody was really, like, who wasn't affiliated with the school was working with me. And I think that's the biggest advice I can get to a dancer. It doesn't matter how big of a school you go to. If you don't have somebody working with you on what you need to work on, it's not worth it. It's worth staying at home with your family, with your teacher that's going to be pushing you, rather than going to a big school and getting lost in a crowd. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I want to go to Debbie Allen Dance or Abby Lee or something like that. It's like, well, did Abby Lee pick you? Did Abby Lee have an idea of what you can dance, what your role is? Like, does the teacher see you and see what they can be giving you?
And you don't just go to the name school. Like, if they say, we want you here, they will give you that individual attention.
And what I was so lucky at Bolshoi because I was touring with the child touring company that they had. That's part of their school. So I was like, I went to Spain within the first 3 months of being there. Like, and this is after never being to a foreign country and getting to represent all of a sudden this Russian ballet school, this weird American girl. Like, I was 16 years old and dancing the lead role in the Kennedy Center for the Protégés project that Bolshoi School brought. And that was just such a special moment to have the director of Kirov School, who told me I would never be a professional dancer,
come and watch you at the Kennedy Center. You're like, told you.
No, but it's not that. And then I was lucky. Like, at 18, I got the highest grade in my class. And the other girl who was my huge competition from Belarus, she was a competition star. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, she had, like, international competition laureate, which is very big in Russia. You should have a medal if you want to join a professional company. It's a different standard than in the States. And, I mean, we were competing to the point where she would not talk to me. You know, and we were in the same class. Like, we were fighting tooth and nail for this spot at Bolshoi. And then to be able to be invited and join the Bolshoi company and be chosen by Natalia Tsufeva's coach to work with her, that was such so
a huge
different.
Honor.
A huge honor. And I felt like I had a responsibility to say yes to that and not to ask questions like, should I join, go back home? Should I do this? I was like, I got to ride this wave for as long as I can.
Because
I
opportunity.
Felt until maybe a year ago that how have I tricked everybody? I'm not actually good. I'm not actually this. Like, I still feel like that. I mean,
Is your brain still telling you that?
Yeah, because I'm like, wait, when is everyone going to wake up and realize that, like, I'm not Russian, or like, I'm not like this, but I've never been Russian, but it was so weird for me to be touring the world with Kremlin Ballet and being called like Russian ballerina, Russian dancer. And I think it's a lesson that, like, guys, we don't need, I was working for my coaches in a sense of like, I needed their approval. Mm-hmm. And now I'm dancing because I love it.
And I think that's a realization that comes a little bit with age as you get older. And but I think a lot of times, and I can go back and even look when I was younger dancing, and it was constantly seeking approval. And I do think that ballet does set up that structure quite a bit. And there's a lot of things that go along with that. I think staring at yourself every day in a mirror, and the weight issue goes along with that. Seeking approval from, you know, whether if you're an athlete, it's your coach, but, you know, and it's your teacher when you're in dance class. And it's when you finally make that breakthrough, it's very freeing. I will say that because you let go a little bit of the perfectionism and then embrace the rawness and the beauty of what dance is about.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm so grateful to Russia and the clear black and white kind of standard that it's given me. But I know that forgiveness and forgiveness of oneself needs to exist in order to make something real on stage happen, or else it looks like a golden gilded parrot, which is how I felt mm-hmm. myself in the last year. Really, I was just like, you know, I was scared of my coach's comments after the show, and just like, I, you know, that's, you work with the same teacher in Russia for your whole life, kind of a thing. And that's great. It's awesome, and it keeps you in shape. But I felt a little bit dead inside artistically.
Yeah, that totally mm-hmm. makes sense, and you needed more. Yeah. And, you know, as you... Because you're not old at all. You're you're 23 right now?
Yeah, but I feel the ill years.
I don't know, but you're so young. Those point shoes. But I mean, oh, I know. Point shoes kill. They do kill. They kill those feet. But, you know, I think that's what's important, though, as you recognize what you need as an adult. And you're like, oh, I need this in my life. I need this in my dance career. A couple things I want to ask about Russia. First of all, how long did it take you to really master the language?
I was lucky because I was really pushed into an environment where I had to speak Russian.
It's not an easy language.
My coach said if I didn't speak Russian in 3 months, she'd kick me out of the class. So, I mean, I think I had like, I have a clear memory of being in Barcelona and having a conversation saying like, I want to go and see the Basilica. Like, I need hairspray. Can you give me hairspray? Like, whereas before I was kind of like,
I need that, this.
And I was like, luck. Luck. Okay, мне нужно luck. Like, and then I remembered, like, I was actually able to, like, voice saying that I needed something. And that was, like, a moment of, like... And then I think it took me a year. And then I was just gaining vocabulary. And
yep.
I mean, a language is like your splits. If you don't practice your splits, they go away, you know. So for me, it opened a new passion. Like, I'm studying currently... You're going to be laugh. French, Spanish, Danish... Korean, because I'm moving to Korea.
Oh my gosh.
Mandarin. I was studying Japanese because I was just in Japan. And then a new one I've just added because I'm going to be a guest artist with Istanbul Opera.
That's cool, Turkish, though. So. But I think once you get a knack for understanding what you need to pick up languages, I think it becomes easier. And like French and Spanish and Italian, the Romance languages, there's a lot of vocabulary that's similar. So.
Well, my parents, thank God, when I was homeschooled, like forced me to study Latin with a French teacher. And I think that is the key. Is if you
the study, dead language, that is the foundation for everything, honestly.
Yeah.
Now, did you go to school in Russia to finish out high school? How did you do it?
I had a very interesting scholastic kind of career. And this is me, parents, I'm not advocating this.
Okay, that's fine.
I went to a private Christian school that was like affiliated with the church that we were going to. So that was like, I had the same six classmates until I was in sixth grade. Like very almost small. Like, you know... and so then to move to Kirov Academy, which was a secular high school, and I also skipped a grade. Like, I went from being in sixth grade, and then I did seventh grade online, like, and studying Latin and all that thing. I went straight into ninth grade, like... And you can imagine this, like, weird, like, church girl with, like, hair down to her butt, like, never even, like, had said a curse word in her life, all of a sudden moving to ballet school. It's, like, something straight out of, like, Center Stage or something like
that. I love
that. Like, I was the nerd. Like, to this day, my good friend Chase O'Connell, who is a principal dancer with Ballet West, we did a guesting last year. He's like, Joy, you were the weirdest girl, and I was so mad when you were my chemistry partner. I just thought he was the most gorgeous thing, and I was like...
And he was like, oh, man, I got the weird girl.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'll do your homework for you, you know? Like, anyway.
And then what happened when you got to Russia?
I went into Russian high school, so I have a Russian degree.
That's amazing. Russian college degree. That's so interesting.
I wanted to get like a GED here. But at the same time, my Russian degree carries over. And
that's all you need.
Yeah.
How about food in Russia? What was that like? Because, I mean, here, we go to a grocery store and you're like, we've got everything you possibly want more.
Well, there, especially now, I mean, it was better when I first went there. Now it's because they have a ban on Western imports. I mean, the food quality in restaurants, it's gotten a lot better over the years. But I discovered, like, I got extremely ill on one of the tours. We went to Greece for a month. And 16 years old, you know, this is when they were having huge riots in the streets and we were getting tear gassed, like, on the way to this.
Gosh.
And so I thought, my parents thought it was a reaction to the tear gas. Like, something happened and I thought it was, like, either it's a reaction to the tear gas or it's my back. And I came home and I was hospitalized for 2.5 weeks. And my mom was like, look, we've got to take gluten out of your diet because I think you're having your body's like attacking itself. And after I did that, not only did I lose a lot of weight that fit the aesthetic that they were looking for.
Oh, no.
it did help me with inflammation and help me with, like, I didn't have a slip disc in my back.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, and then I didn't, I mean, they would literally give us a cow's tongue for lunch. Like, and I just couldn't eat meat anymore. So that's my diet now, which is like gluten-free and vegetarian. Yep. And I've done really well with that diet in Russia. And also when I travel, because like I'll spend a month in China, and if you're eating meat, you can get really sick because of the different parasites that can live in.
When I was there was like a swine outbreak and you shouldn't be eating pork. And
I could tell you horror stories of the parasites I've had. You know, you get really sick from drinking bad water, and there's, you know, not good water there. But Russia now, if you have money, you can have what you need. But it's not, here in America, we get so used to just this like epic amount of options.
And if we don't like it, then you just throw it away and you get something else.
Get something new. And the portion size. So when I come back here, my mom thinks it's hilarious. We're taking joy. She will drop me off at the HEB, which is like a superstore in Texas, and I will just take a cart and walk down the aisles.
You're like, we gotta do this.
Sensory overload. I love it.
Can we talk about the Russian aesthetic? And I think that the ballet aesthetic all the time is always such an issue too. Like, are they looking for the same sort of thin waifish, which has changed a little bit in the United States in the ballet world? It's gotten a little better.
This is a very serious topic for me because I recently lost a student.
Oh, you did?
To suicide.
Oh, my gosh.
And somebody who went to the Bolshoi Ballet Academy.
Wow.
But that has started a dialogue.
And you know what? And that usually does start a dialogue.
Because when I was there, we have, and it's now, you can find the tab. I think they even have it online. There's height, weight requirements. But you have to also understand that these girls are chosen from the age 10. Mm-hmm. So they're weeded out. So a lot of them have this look naturally.
Yeah.
It's not. But this is me, big boned American girl, trying to fit myself.
You're not big boned, though.
And they would call me muscular, overly muscular, even now. There's this, you know, I had to be, I when I finished graduation, and this is, I was 38 kilograms. That's too small.
What does that translate into US?
That was like, it's almost, well, I know in pounds, I was, I think, 78 or 8. Like, I was.
Yeah,
I
got, you're not gotten, even the 100.
I had gotten so thin, like, I was just skeletal.
Yeah.
And I could not do everything that I can do now. Like, I just was, very.
And how tall are you? You're taller than me, so you're, are you like 5'6"-ish?
Five and a half.
Okay, because I'm 5'3", so just think.
So, but, I mean, now I weigh 103 pounds, and, like, that's, you know, like, their weight for when you're in school is, for my height, you have to be 45 kilograms, which is 100 pounds.
Okay.
So that's,
It's at least higher. Yeah.
But if you look at the Bolshoi Company, and if you look at Stanislavski Theater, they have healthy women.
Okay.
You know. So I think it's just the look of the schools. Mariinsky, I think they are a lot thinner. Mm-hmm. But they're also very tall. The girls in Mariinsky, you can't get hired unless you're 5'7".
Oh, interesting. Right now. Yeah.
That's the trend.
You know, it was interesting. Growing up and studying at Boston Ballet, when we would do juries and stuff like that, and this is back in the day and they don't do it anymore, but it was performance technique, and the third category was weight. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that even happens over here in the U.S., and no one's immune to it. And but I hope that everyone is in a better place of where everyone's talking about it a little bit more or understands better nutrition or treating bodies better, because I think each year it gets better.
It's better, but we have to also understand this is – you need to be real with yourself what profession you're going into. You're going to put a tutu on stage or a leotard. So,
and you're in a mirror every day,
too. You're in a mirror every day. So take care of your mental health, but there's an aesthetic. So take care. And I think that we've gotten a lot better in the States about cross-training and talking about nutrition and, you know
adding Pilates.
It's not just, like, I'm going to go on a crazy diet and, you know, drink, like, gallons of water.
Eat air and cigarettes and water.
Yeah. No, and I I'm all for a good cross train, mm-hmm. like a good cardio session, a good, you know, I love that. And I love being in a stable base where you can provide that for yourself. It's harder if you're freelancing to provide that.
Right.
You know, because it's not compensated by the companies. So,
and you had some injuries when you were over in Russia, too.
Yes.
You were dancing on broken
bones. I had a broken wrist. I was, like, doing chenets, and my coach pushed me, and it was cold. So slipped and broke my wrist literally right before we were getting on the plane. And, like, this soy doctor was like, oh, it will be fine. Just do this. And I was like, and I flew all the way to Washington like this, and they like sawed open the cast, and I was like, we're gonna do it. And with a broken wrist, and my mom has it framed in the review. They're like, her fluid wrist. And my mom was dying.
Yeah, you're like, my wrist was floppy because it was broken. there's a great New York Times piece about you from when
I just got to the school. I mean, because we have to talk about the floors in Russia are raked.
Yeah,
so I think that was a lot of pressure on my still forming bones to go from being like this to like that. And so I was just ready for the stress structures.
And they just like froze your ankle and you dance.
Oh, yeah. They have this freeze on that they just freeze you up. You go out there, you do your thing, then you come back out.
Now, see, I you know, dancers are always, to me, they are the toughest athletes out there, and we dance through pain, and we have a high threshold for pain. But that, just listening to even that in that little New York Times video, I was like,
that was so hard, too, because my parents were really like, you should come home. And I knew that if I left, there wouldn't be a place for me.
There's like, 'cause no going back.
My coach had, like, forced away for me. And they were taking so many risks. And, like, really, if it weren't for her.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about why you left Bolshoi? A little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you're totally open about that. 'Cause it's... You know what? And I was thinking about this. I'm like, it's a lot of what's happening here in Hollywood and what we're talking about and things like that. And there was a lot of like, they would expect some of the dancers maybe to be sponsored by gentlemen kind of thing. And
well, I think also the period that the Bolshoi is in now, like the new director, Vaziev, he's a wonderful man.
So there's been a nice turn.
And there's been, and there, and like, I have so many wonderful friends there. And I just did Moscow Ballet Competition and was in classes with my old teachers and things like that. And it's wonderful. Like, it was so wonderful to be back. I was just in a very weird period in the company, like, with a very, like, there was just a different people were in power. Let's just say that.
And there was a lot of weirdness going on. I mean, one of the principal dancers, commissioned like an acid attack on the artistic director.
There's a lot of like, I'm not going to comment on that because there's a lot of back and forth and a lot of like, you know, Pavel, I don't think was guilty. Like, I think there's a lot of things that were like framing and
politics just, and things like that to get into like it. But you guys can read up on it. Yeah. It's just weird.
Well, there's a lot of just non-truths that are out there. So, like, personally, me, you know, like, there's that just happens. I'm not unique. It just happens to most dancers in that company, and that's kind of something that you are expected to either be okay with or not okay with. And it was made very clear to me that if I didn't find protection, that even though I could dance certain things and I was getting certain things ready, I would not have, you know, first run or second run or third run or fourth run.
And they were basically asking for money,
but
for roles.
I think
right?
things that the thing that was like wrongly reported is like, oh, she's expecting it in its principles. No, I was so happy doing what I was doing. I was so happy being there, learning, and I was just very lucky to be being coached on you know, Cinderella, on Swan, like on like different soloist roles, like in Don Quixote. There's like bridesmaid variations, like starting slow, and I would not be given those opportunities because other girls were. You know, either they were more in favor or things like that. And it just, like, but I kept that story to myself. And then when I went on tour, because a lot of the girls who this was happening to, we would just tour with other dancers around Russia. Mm-hmm. So one of those tours, I went to Krasnodar, and a woman published an interview that was, like, from my point of view, sharing, that story, that's everybody's story in the company, and then that went viral. Like, I came home back from this first of all, the Russian TV, they found me in Krasnodar, like, these, like, paparazzi, and were, like, trying to get, like, a comment, and my phone was blowing up, and it was the scariest thing.
This isn't my story. This is every female story.
It was everyone's story, but it also, I didn't choose to share it in a sense of, like, I knew my job was going to be over if I opened my mouth. And so that kind of decision was kind of made for me, like, oh, she's American, she'll land on her feet. Like, we need her side of her story. So I kind of came back and was, like, shell-shocked. Like, oh, my God, what do I do? Like, this job that I've given up so much of my life for, made so many personal sacrifices for, like, it's technically over, you know? And, like, you come home and at the metro and there's, like, your face in a picture of, like, American accuses the Bolshoi of, like, you know? And it's also this, like, oh, Americans hate Russians kind of a thing, which we don't.
No.
But there's this attitude there that we do. And I could not be more grateful for Andrei Borisovich, the director of Kremlin. He gave me a job.
A principal job, correct?
Yeah, he was like, I was 19 years old. He's like, come and dance the lead in Nutcracker. So this is Kremlin Ballet Theater, which is in this center of Red Square. The theater is 6,500 seats. Mm. And he's like, come. After I just had all of this media, like, this girl is a liar, this girl is a blah,
oh
blah, blah.
Gosh.
And it, for me, it was almost like, maybe I am, maybe I don't deserve this. It was just like this, like, huge personal crisis. And to be given a second chance and then given a coach, she formed me from being nobody to, they gave me a chance, and they gave me chance after chance. And I went and competed in Perm and did really well, got a medal there. And that kind of was like, okay, all right, we're going to give you opportunities now.
Wow.
And to be, you know, and 19 years old as a principal dancer. I mean, that was
so, it's a lot. It's a lot of pressure,
too. So much pressure. And that started kind of, people think like, oh, wow, that's amazing to be promoted at 19. I just wanted a place to, like, hide. I didn't, you know, I almost was scared of the spotlight. So I started this whole, it started this whole kind of, like, time in my life where I was fiercely scared of the stage.
Mm.
Because I was scared of being like, oh, she doesn't deserve that. Like, it's only because of,
well,
her.
And then you feel vulnerable and you feel exposed.
Yeah.
And because someone exposed you on the personal side of.
So I didn't know who to trust. I didn't know what to do. Things in my personal life were falling apart. And just, you know, to be so young and have to deal with all of that, it was, my refuge was actually like the repetition of ballet. Like, it wasn't the actual performance. It was just the, like, daily grind.
Yep, get to the ballet bar, start doing the pliés.
And it almost seemed like when people would tell me about, like, oh, wow, your story's so amazing, like, well, I didn't believe them. So that's when I decided, I was like, look, I'm going to start recording my days and recording my rehearsals because, like, I need to keep record and I want to share my story. I want to share my side because I felt like so many people were judging me. Mm-hmm. And so then that's when I started posting videos every day online. And then last year there was a huge crackdown on content, like, in, you know, being created. And
was so that coming from the ballet company or was it coming from Russia itself?
Well, I think that my company was just made to feel very uncomfortable. Like, people, you know, I mean, first of all, it was exposing kind of the laziness, the attitude that, like, was there in the company. And, like, people think Russian ballet and they don't think of, like, laziness. There's a lot of the fact that there, it is state-sponsored. There's a ballet company in every single city. And if you finish the ballet school, that becomes your profession. So you have these incredible dancers who are soloists and principals. They're extremely ambitious. But the people who are in the court of ballet, that's kind of their job. They didn't even have the option to study and try to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them take it like, oh, just getting the morning coffee, like taking the dog out for a walk.
Right.
And that's where I came up against a lot of hate because these girls who are like, well, who does she think she is? Like, she can just push her way to the front, like, you know.
Yeah, I've been here in the corps de ballet for X amount of years.
Yeah.
Who is she?
Yeah. And so some of those girls just got really angry and just like were like, she has to stop sharing stuff online. And that was really hard for me because I love making content. So I'll make a video like every week or every 2 weeks or something like that and I'll put it up. But then when I decided this year to transition, I was like, I cannot put what's going on out online because I don't want it you know, I don't want to have repercussions.
Well, you've already lived through that, too.
Yeah.
From the Bolshoi. You kind of, like, understand, like, there's certain things I just need to step back from. Yeah. And that comes with maturity, too. Yeah. Like, we understand. Like, you just throwing everything out there is probably not the best
short-sighted. Idea. It's short-sighted. And ballet, your dance career, and this is not just for ballerinas, it's a checkers game. It's a chess game. You got to... And that kind of ties back to what you were saying beforehand. It's like, girls who want to be ballet dancers, guys who want to be ballet dancers, think of your life strategically.
Yeah.
Like, think about, because you have an idea of what you want, be realistic, and then make the plan. And then if things happen, then things just happen also.
They do. And that sometimes you think your course is going, like, right, and sometimes you need to go left, and you need to embrace going left on that, because that's the door that's opening. And I think that's what we fail to see sometimes.
Oh, and for sure. I mean, I up until, like, June of last year, I was like, I'm going to stay with Kremlin. I'm going to either, like, go back to Bolshoi or Mariinsky. Like, that's my plan. Mm-hmm. Like, blah, blah, blah. Russia. I love Russia, and I will never not love Russia, and I'm so happy to have a base there, and I will still continue to do work there. But I was so scared of my coach's kind of judgment of me. She said, like, look, if you aren't with me, I'm going to blackball you. You can't dance with anybody else. And it just sort of made me feel like I wasn't good enough to try to do what I wanted to do. And I just couldn't imagine just dancing Swan Lake and Don Quixote for the rest of my life. Like, I love them.
Was that your aha moment? Ballet.
Like, my aha moment was after I did Moscow competition and realized, like, that's kind of the last thing I really felt like I really wanted to do in Russia. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, where do I go from here? And, like, I'll never forget Nina Kupsova crying on a...
Up there.
Yeah, like, I'll never forget Nina Kupsova crying on a couch because she didn't get first cast in Onegin. And, like, Nina Kupsova is one of the most beautiful, humble, working, like, hardworking dancers I've met. And I'm like, I do not want to be 35 years old and crying because I didn't get the role I wanted.
Right.
Like, and I was like, yes, I love Russia, but I've got to go...
You need a little more control, I think, over, like, not only growth journey, but a little bit more control over your story, I think. I think that's what's really important. When you decided to leave, did you know where you were going next? Or has it been a little bit more?
I was like, well, okay, well, I'll, like, re-audition here, do this, do that. And that was huge eye-opening. Like, I auditioned for so many companies, and I was like, you're great, but we don't have a place for you. Or, like, you don't fit our company, do this. And I was like, wow, I've gone through all of this training, done all of this, like, won these awards, blah, 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 and it's nothing. It is so, like, whatever the director needs at that moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, Julie Ken was so nice, but she's like, look, I can't give you a place in my company. And that was, like, really hard because I would have loved to move back to the States. I would have loved to dance with ABT or you know, Washington Ballet. And, like, I was like, give me a core place. You know, like, I'll start over from the beginning.
Yeah, you're like, I'm fine being,
like, whatever you need me to hold the pole in the background, that's great, because I would really like to see my parents more than once a year, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, almost this moment of, like, oh, my God. Like, God, like, why bring me so far just to not, like, where am I supposed to be? And I was flying back to Moscow, and I was like, look, okay, Joy, like, you need to humble yourself. You just need to suck it up, and you just need to see what you have to learn this year. Like, if it's just patience, then it's just putting one foot in front of the other, putting one hand at the bar, and just doing it, doing your job. Like, as much as it pains you to be around people who don't want to be there, and frankly, just not understanding why you want to be doing it. And I get this email from wonderful Brian at Universal Ballet, and he's like, look, I've seen some of your videos, and I'd love to offer you a principal position. And that just shook me to the core. Because how could this girl who's had all of this crap, like, shared about her online, you know, be able to get a wonderful job? So it's going to be a new adventure in Korea, and I'm excited to learn. And just those dancers are so hardworking and so beautiful, and I can't wait to take 3 steps back and start again.
It's like a new chapter.
Yeah.
That's what's so great.
Yeah.
When do you officially start in Korea?
The 22nd.
Oh my gosh, really soon.
The 22nd of January.
January, okay. So, I was like, oh my gosh, you're not going to even spend Christmas with your family at least?
And no, I'm going to Turkey now and then to prepare for Swan Lake. Then I'm going to dance I'm going to dance in Melbourne with a beautiful school. They're putting on a full-length production. And my partner from Turkey and I are going to go and dance that, which is really exciting because it's just this kind of combination of all over the world.
Oh, I love that.
And then I go back and I dance a performance in Yaroslav on the 31st. And then I'll probably be moving to South Korea after that.
That's incredible. Yeah. So is it a full-time position in Korea?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. So we were talking about, you know, just how hard it is in the States to have a full-time position because a full-time position really doesn't necessarily exist because you have layoffs and things like that.
I call being a professional dancer in the States, like, no offense to everybody, it's being a professional student because you rehearse a production for 3 months and then you get one go.
Yeah.
How can you grow as a dancer if the one thing that you're dancing is Nutcracker?
Yeah, you don't have that constant, like, repertory going out there.
Yeah, and you prepare for a show, you give a left arm and a right lung for that show, and then you dance it once, and then maybe that performance comes around 3 years later. And I just feel like American audiences would love the ballet if it were more accessible. And that's why we need state funding for the arts.
And we're struggling with that right now.
And it's a big issue for me. And people ask me all the time, what do I see myself doing after dance? Like, oh, will you be teacher? Will you be director? I want to be an advocate, a lobbyist for dance funding in the States and a spokesperson for why we need classical ballet, how great it is, and travel the world. Just sort of outreaching to different governments saying, like, look, give us a little money, we'll take it far. Will you? And there's a wonderful woman, Lisa Makuha, in the Philippines. She started a school. Mm-hmm. The school gives free tuition. Those kids that make it into the company then are given a salary. That salary supports that whole extended family.
Wow.
Those family members are making costumes, you know, working in the backstage. So you've got this ballet company that's helped this community that was struggling with drugs, with underage pregnancy, just kind of lift itself up.
It changes. Yeah. One person can change an entire community with that.
How great would it be to have, you know, non-for-profit ballet schools in low-income places and, you know, subsidized training costs, clothing costs? What would that do for a community that's drug riddled?
Oh, it'll change lives. We know that. Like, that's not even, I mean, you're seeing it there. We've seen it even here in the United States. Yeah. Not in terms of, like, state run and things like that. But private schools. Funded, yep. It's kind of amazing. And you know what? That's great, too, when you have, because you know your dance career is going to be X amount of years, to already know and have plans for what you're going to do next, I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of dancers kind of get to a point or they have that unexpected injury and go, what next?
What do I do?
I don't know what to do. All I've had is dance. Yeah. And maybe they don't want to teach. What are you going to do?
Well, and not everybody can be a teacher. And that's also a mistake. Don't force yourself into a teaching position if that's not your calling.
That was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing to be ashamed with that. And that's actually wise and big of you to say, like, look, this isn't my role. Mm-hmm. Because children, I mean, that's a big responsibility. It's not just teaching them the steps. It's how you are, your way, your respect, your, you know, your discipline. And that's, I mean, I've given a master class where I've gotten a side eye and I've called a kid out on it. And maybe that wasn't the thing that I should have done.
Yep.
You know? But, I mean, we need funding.
Yeah, we do need funding.
And we don't need... I take issue with private funded things because then you have somebody dictating what you're doing. Because not all gifts are given without any strings attached.
There are usually lots of strings. And that's the problem.
And then you're an artist for commission. And then where's your artistic freedom?
And you lose all of that. Yeah.
People think of Russia as like, wow, they are so not free there. No, each and every city has a ballet company. Kazan has a ballet company of 300 people. That's not only just, there's opera, there's ballet, there's the costume department, there's music, there's a full-time orchestra.
And a full-time orchestra is such a luxury.
Do you know where Yoshkar-Ala is? Like these places that, like, Ekaterinburg, Novosibirsk, like they have
huge
theaters. They're putting on full-time productions, and it's not just like, oh, this, we have Swan Lake for 2 weeks. No, it's, you know, on Monday we have Swan Lake, on Tuesday we have Don Quixote, Thursday we have Balanchine, you know, this kind of a thing. The audiences love it. The tickets are not more than $20.
Oh my gosh. And here it's like, you know, $200 for a nice orchestra seat and things like that here in the U.S. It's really a challenge.
Yeah, and how could you get a family to take their kids out to that? That's not in, and some of these companies, like some of the programming, is not age appropriate. And I mean, we are not giving the story ballets enough credit.
That's absolutely true, because it's a family event that you can take them to.
I mean, talk about going to the Sleeping Beauty, seeing a Disney movie come alive. Like that's you exactly take your what it is. Of Do you want to take your 6-year-old to whatever Sarah Sue has thought about last Thursday with no top on? You know, like sometimes that's what you're doing. When you're in these companies, you're doing like rep. That's great, but that should be offered as supplemental. It shouldn't be like the only thing on the menu.
Absolutely. I can't believe an hour's up. Sorry. Believe it or not. No, it's like, no, I was like, this is good. This we can talk about for hours and hours because it's so fascinating. I just want to mention that you're here and you're dancing Nutcracker this weekend, yes. West Side Ballet.
West Side Ballet, go check it out. This is the 45th season they've done this production.
And you're Sugar Plum Fairy.
I'm going to be the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Yeah.
But there's a great cast of talented, talented kids.
And what theater are they?
They're at the Broad Theater in Santa Monica.
Oh, fantastic.
Go check it out.
I want to thank you so much for being open and honest, because I know that it's such an amazing journey that you've had, and I know you're in the middle of your journey, which is even more incredible, and I can't wait to see the next chapter. And I hope that if you're here next time, you come on back.
Oh, it would be so fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I want to hear about chapter 2 and chapter 3.
Who knows what's going to happen? This grandma's got to point her toes. You know, got to work on that turnout. But
you're good. You're good. You're not giving yourself enough credit for what you've accomplished. For people that want to connect with you, Instagram, Twitter, where can they find you?
I am on Instagram at joy.womack. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on YouTube, and you can follow me, you can send me a message, and I'm also on Mentorly. So if you want to get a private session of coaching, you can sign up at Mentorly, and you can get an hour Skype session with me for free and ask questions about your career.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much, Joy. And I'm so excited just to, you know, hear about everything that's next.
I'll keep you up to date, and guys, go see dance.
Please support your ballet.
And write your congressman. That's, need arts funding.
We certainly do. There's so many things to write our congressman about right now. Oh gosh, so much going on here. But of course, we want to thank you guys for joining us here at To The Point. Next week, we do have Dancing with the Stars pro Gleb Savchenko. Ooh, he will be here. I know, another Russian. Ooh, yes, of course.
Say privet for
me. I will. <Yeah. laughs> I only know how to say cheers. That's all. That's all. All right. Well, thank you so much, you guys. And we will see you all next week here on To The Point, presented by Popcorn Talk and Dance Network.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals. I got a friend way back in love.